got a spring or an itch, pain that's swelling or twitch, call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky. I call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining.
COPD. These are letters many, if not most of us, have heard. It stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. But it really consists of several separate diseases, each with a different cause and some different symptoms. As the individual words state, it is a chronic or long-term disease, unlike, let's say, an acute problem like common cold or sore throat can be. As a chronic disease, it can last a lifetime. Now, the second word, obstructive, really tells us what its root cause is. Being obstructive, it's due to obstruction of the airways, such that sufficient air cannot get to the lungs to supply oxygen to our body tissues that require it, and remove the waste products of respiration, such as carbon dioxide, which, when it is accumulated in our bodies, can cause significant danger to our lives.
The two major diseases associated with COPD are emphysema and bronchitis. And both can show similar symptoms such as difficulty breathing, cough, mucus, or, as it is sometimes called, sputum production, as well as wheezing, where you labored breathing makes a whistling sound.
It is typically caused by long-term exposure to irritating gases or what's called particulate matter, most often from cigarette smoke. People with COPD are at increased risk of developing heart disease, lung cancer, and a variety of other conditions. Remember, I just said that both emphysema and chronic bronchitis are different diseases, both being COPD diseases, so both can actually exist at the same time in the same person. Remember when Carmen and I talked about the circulatory system and its network of blood vessels with bigger vessels becoming smaller and smaller until they're literally microscopic as capillaries, which go to literally all of our organs, supplying nutrients, including oxygen to our organs.
Well, the respiratory system is very similar. Air comes in through our mouth and nose to the throat and trachea. It then divides into two fairly large tubes called the bronchi, which go to the left and right lungs.
Once in the lungs, these divide into smaller and smaller bronchioles until they end in the alveoli, which are the end sacs where most of the oxygen gets transported into the blood vessels to make that long journey to all of our organs. Now, we're telling you this because knowing that makes it a little easier to understand the difference between emphysema and bronchitis. Chronic bronchitis is inflammation of the lining of the bronchial tubes, which carry air to and from the air sacs, called the alveoli of the lungs. It's characterized by daily cough and sputum.
On the other hand, emphysema is a condition in which the alveoli at the end of the smallest air passages of the lungs are destroyed as a result of damaging exposure to things such as cigarette smoke and other irritating gases, and particulate matter.
That's right. The alveoli may be permanently damaged. If enough are damaged, then breathing can get exceedingly difficult because not enough are present to be able to absorb sufficient oxygen, and our organs suffer.
It's scary because COPD is a progressive disease that gets worse over time. But the good news is that COPD is often treatable with proper management. Most people with COPD can achieve good symptom control and quality of life, as well as reduced risk of other associated conditions.
Although we have touched upon just some of the major symptoms that sufferers experience when having COPD, there are a number of other signs and symptoms of the disease, such as that feeling of chest tightness, frequent respiratory infections, lack of energy, unintended weight loss, and swelling of the ankles, feet, and legs. People with COPD are also likely to experience intermittent worsening episodes of all of these symptoms, and that's what are often called exacerbations.
The fact is that the main cause of COPD in developed countries such as ours is tobacco smoking. It is slightly different in developing nations, where COPD often occurs in people exposed to fumes from burning fuel for cooking and heating in poorly ventilated homes.
Now, some long-term smokers do not develop clinically apparent COPD, although many smokers with long smoke histories may develop reduced lung function. There are other respiratory diseases that some smokers do develop, which are less common than COPD, and they are often misdiagnosed. We tell you that so you don't hesitate to see the physician if you have any of the symptoms that we mentioned, and especially if you are a smoker.
Let's now get a little deeper in the anatomy that we started to describe earlier. We ended up by talking about the alveoli, those air sacs where oxygen and carbon dioxide are exchanged.
The alveoli have very thin walls. As a matter of fact, they can be just the thickness of a single cell, and that is small. How thick, you may ask? Well, ask me, how thick are they?
All right, now how thick are they, Dr. Lasky?
The layers of cells lining the alveoli and the surrounding capillaries are each only about 1 micron thick. That's about 39 millionths of an inch in thickness.
So, remember that your heart does one thing, and that is pump blood around the body in order to supply the blood to all organs around your body. Without the heart, the blood cannot get around, and without the blood, the body gets almost no oxygen, and it is unable to get rid of that waste product, carbon dioxide.
Your lungs also rely on the natural elasticity of the bronchial tubes and the air sacs to force air out of your body. COPD causes them to lose that elasticity and overexpand, which leaves some air trapped in your lungs when you exhale. So what happens with airway obstruction? In the case of emphysema, there is destruction of the fragile walls and elastic fibers of the alveoli. This also causes small airway collapse when you exhale, impairing the airflow out of your lungs.
With chronic bronchitis, your bronchial tubes become inflamed and narrowed, and your lungs produce more mucus, which can further block the narrowed tubes. This is when you begin to develop that chronic cough as you try to clear your airway.
Remember that we already mentioned that not all cigarette smokers develop the symptoms of COPD, although the majority do. There's lung damage that leads to COPD, and that is caused by long-term cigarette smoking. But there are also other factors at play in the development of COPD, such as genetic susceptibility to the disease. Remember that cigar and cigarette smoking are not the only irritant-related causes of COPD. There's also secondhand smoke, pipe smoke, air pollution, and workplace exposure to dust, smoke, or fumes. There's also a less common cause, sometimes called alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency.
It is only found in about 1% of people with COPD, and it is due to a genetic disorder that causes low levels of particular protein called alpha-1 antitrypsin, which is normally made in the liver and secreted into bloodstream to help protect the lungs.
Alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency can cause liver disease, lung disease, or both. In this case, some people can be treated by replacing the missing protein, which may prevent further damage to the lungs. Now, if you don't want the risk of possibility of developing COPD or wish to lessen worsening of symptoms, don't smoke. Other risk factors include exposure to tobacco smoke, so try to stay away from others who do smoke cigars, cigarettes, or pipes.
Another common breathing disease is asthma, which is also a chronic inflammatory airway disease, which may be a risk factor for developing COPD.
And the combination of asthma and smoking increases the risk of COPD even more. Try to avoid any exposure to dust and chemicals, as long-term exposure, or sometimes even a single exposure to chemical fumes, vapors, and dusts in the workplace can irritate and inflame your lungs, causing lifelong problems.
Although exposure to fumes from burning fuel is the most common cause in developing countries, we have to be careful here in the U.S. as well, since some people right here can become exposed to fumes from burning fuel for cooking and heating in poorly ventilated homes.
It's important to note that people with COPD are more likely to catch colds, the flu, and pneumonia. And it has been shown that COVID-19 was particularly harmful, with increased mortality in those who smoked. Remember that any respiratory infection can make it much more difficult to breathe and can cause further damage to lung tissue. Even heart problems, for whatever reason, which we really do not yet fully understand, can become worse when in someone who also suffers with COPD. Then there's that four-letter word, lung cancer. People with COPD have a higher risk of developing lung cancer.
COPD may cause high blood pressure in the arteries that bring blood to your lungs. This is called pulmonary hypertension.
And we cannot forget associated depression, as difficulty breathing can keep you from doing activities that you enjoy. And dealing with serious illness can contribute to the development of depression.
If you're a long-time smoker, this simple statement may not seem so simple, especially if you have tried quitting once, twice, or many times before, but keep trying to quit. It's critical to find a tobacco cessation program that can help you quit for good.
No, I don't care how old you are. It's your best chance for reducing damage to your lungs. Many of you may already be on medications for COPD, and many more may soon or later be diagnosed with COPD and want to know what medications may be prescribed. So let's start with what are called the short-acting bronchodilators. These help open your airways to make breathing easier.
Physicians often prescribe these short-acting bronchodilators for an emergency situation or for quick relief as needed. They can be taken using an inhaler or a nebulizer.
Examples of these short-acting bronchodilators include albuterol, such as ProAir HFA and Ventolin HFA. There's also levobuterol brand named Zopenex and Atrovent AHA, which is the brand name of the generic medication called ipratropium, as well as a combination of albuterol-ipratropium called Combivent Respimat. These short-acting bronchodilators can cause side effects such as dry mouth, headaches, cough, tremors, and a fast heartbeat. And if you have a heart condition, you should inform your doctor before taking any short-acting bronchodilator.
Corticosteroids are often used as anti-inflammatories in many diseases, COPD not being an exception. With COPD, your airway can be inflamed, causing them to become swollen and irritated. Inflammation makes it harder to breathe.
Corticosteroids are a type of medication that reduces inflammation in your body, making airflow easier in the lungs. Several types of corticosteroids are available. Some are inhalable and should be used every day as directed. They're also prescribed in combination at some times with a long-acting COPD drug. Other corticosteroids are injected or taken by mouth. These forms are used on a short-term basis when your COPD suddenly gets worse.
The corticosteroids that are most often prescribed for COPD are Flovent Pulmicort and the generic prednisolone.
Now, let's suppose that these do not work well enough and more is needed to alleviate the symptoms of COPD. Then the doctor can add the methyl xanthine, such as theophylline, along with a bronchodilator, which also works as an anti-inflammatory drug, and it relaxes the muscles in the airways. Some medications that COPD sufferers take are not for the immediate symptoms, but for the more chronic ones, and are not used in emergencies.
These include the long-acting bronchodilators used to treat COPD over a long period of time. They are usually taken once or twice daily using inhalers or nebulizers. Because these drugs work gradually to help ease breathing, they don't act as quickly as rescue medication.
So remember that these are not meant to be used in an emergency situation. There are a lot of these now available. We'll only name just a few, such as Tidorza, Buvana, Foradil, Straverdi, Respimat, Cerevent, and Spiriva. Many come as combination drugs, and there is even a triple therapy, which happens to be a combination of an inhaled corticosteroid and two long-acting bronchodilators. It's recommended for those who continue to have shortness of breath or trouble breathing and are currently using other combination therapy.
It is called Trelegy or Wellipta, which is a combination of fluticasone, bilaterol, and eclidinium.
There's now a drug on the horizon called roflumilast, which is a type of drug called a phosphodiesterase 4 inhibitor. It's a once-daily pill that helps relieve inflammation.
I'm Dr. Harold Lasky. I have been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 34 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Tulsa Welding School and the old Pottsburg Post Office.
We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains.
We are proud to welcome to Southside Medical Center Dr. Susan Pollan, MD, a board-certified pain specialist.
Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care.
Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show.
You know, something that we didn't mention in the first part of the show is the use of vaccines. It's important for people with COPD to get a yearly flu vaccine. It can decrease your risk for getting sick and can help you avoid infections and other complications related to COPD. We also have not mentioned the use of antibiotics. I get a lot of questions about this from patients.
Regular treatment with antibiotics like azithromycin and erythromycin may help manage COPD, as a 2018 research review indicated that consistent antibiotic treatment helped reduce COPD flare-ups.
However, the study noted that repeated antibiotic use can also cause antibiotic resistance. It's found that azithromycin was associated with hearing loss as a side effect, so you have to be careful. More studies are needed to determine the long-term effects of regular antibiotic use. There are also several cancer drugs that could possibly help reduce inflammation and limit damage from COPD. This was included in a 2019 study which found that the drug tafasitin AG825 helped lower inflammation levels in zebrafish.
The medication also sped up the rate of death of neutrophils, which are cells that promote inflammation, in mice with inflamed lungs similar to COPD.
I'm sure that you have at least heard the term biologic drugs. Now, in some people, inflammation from COPD may be a result of eosinophilia, which is having a higher than normal number of a specific type of white blood cell called an eosinophil. These biologic drugs may be able to treat this form of COPD are Nucala, Fasenra, Sinquair, and Dupixent. Now, we mentioned vaccines a few moments ago, so I want to get on to another subject concerning the news concerning the Johnson & Johnson embarrassment, as reported in the New York Times on March 31st of this year. It seems that human errors at a manufacturing plant forced Johnson & Johnson to throw away 15 million doses of its COVID-19 vaccine, really enough to vaccinate 7% of the U.S. adult population.
Remember that this was not a recall where the vaccines had already been distributed. The arrow was caught at the plant. Had this not been a vaccine, then this in-house error would probably never have been reported.
This kind of news does sound shocking, but it's also a reminder that the U.S. vaccine manufacturing process has strict quality control measures designed to catch these problems before they reach the public. Vaccine manufacturing is complex, and we really do not see the steps needed to get them to market. All we really ever see on the media are hundreds and thousands of vaccine bottles getting filled on an assembly line.
There are, of course, many potential points for errors. The multiple layers of quality checks by the producers and external inspectors throughout the process are what should give us even more confidence in the vaccines.
Have you ever heard the woodworking saying, measure twice, cut once? Well, Carmen and I enjoy a hobby of woodworking, and there's almost no major product that, even with all the measuring, that during the cutting process, some piece of wood has to be redone. Perhaps it's a mistaken measurement, or perhaps it's a problem with the wood itself. But we check even after putting the project together.
After authorizing a vaccine, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration must approve and regularly inspect each vaccine manufacturing facility.
In the case of COVID-19 vaccines, manufacturers are required to submit the results of each quality control test for every batch of vaccines 48 hours prior to its distribution. Now, this stringent quality control process has led to what the FDA describes as the safest vaccine supply in U.S. history. It's because of all this quality control process that Johnson & Johnson discovered the defects within the batch of 15 million doses at the Emergent BioSolutions facility. I recently ordered a metal work table from a very reputable company. It consisted of 12 parts, 8 crossbars and 4 legs, along with nuts and bolts. When I got to the last part, it didn't fit. At first I thought maybe I made a mistake, but that wasn't the case. I called the company, and they immediately knew the problem. Someone at the manufacturing plant drilled the holes backwards. They sent me the new part. Errors happen everywhere. Thank God for in-house inspectors and quality control.
Remember that all vaccine manufacturing plants, be they American or international, require authorization from the FDA before they can supply vaccines to the U.S. population.
The Johnson & Johnson vaccines currently used in the United States were manufactured at their own facility in the Netherlands. Remember the U.S. government's Operation Warp Speed, which began during the Trump administration? Well, at one point, it deployed 16 Department of Defense personnel to 2 manufacturing sites to fill gaps in the quality control workforce so production could continue.
Even as the vaccines have been distributed, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention continues to monitor for any problems in patients.
In fact, looking back in history, the U.S. learned years ago how quality control checks and independent verification are for vaccine safety, when in 1955, the polio vaccine rollout led to 40,000 vaccine-induced polio infections. Now, even the flu vaccine maker Sanofi said it now spends about 70% of its production time on quality checks, and its vaccines are checked again by health officials once they're shipped from the facility.
Luckily, both COVID-19 vaccines made by Moderna and Pfizer don't involve live virus, as traditional flu vaccines do.
I believe that this news event should actually give us more confidence in the vaccine manufacturer, since we see how vigorous the quality control is and how well it is working to prevent bad vaccines from circulating, and it really ensures vaccine safety.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana.
We've come to the end of another Hey Doc Show.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.